You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, November the 17th. Today is the 2 month anniversary of the start of the Occupy movement, and there are Occupy demonstrations happening as we speak in New York City. Activists who are angry at having been evicted from their encampment at their park have vowed a day of action today, including a threatened shutdown of the New York Stock Exchange, an occupation of 14 subway stations, and for the second time in 2 months, a reoccupation of the Brooklyn Bridge. We are going to talk about the present and the future of the Occupy movement, and also discuss whether the Occupy movement has a future, whether the Occupy movement will influence politics the way the Tea Party movement has in recent elections. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest who studies these political and social movements. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You know, our conversation was prompted at first by the results of the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College Survey Center poll when we asked Wisconsin residents if they supported the Occupy movement and or the Tea Party movement. And the results were close. The results of our poll show that 35% of Wisconsin residents strongly or just approve of the Occupy movement. So strongly approve or approve, 35% say that's the case with the Occupy movement. And 31% in our poll said that they approve or strongly approve of the Tea Party movement. Which camp are you in, if either? And do you think both movements are here to stay? Again, we welcome your reactions and your views. Our guest is Dina Rollinger. She is an associate professor of sociology at Florida State University. She studies political protest and social movements. And she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, lots going on in New York right now. This is the 2 month anniversary, and hundreds of demonstrators are upset that they were evicted from their park. Your reaction to what's happening today?
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense from both the protester perspective as well as the authorities' perspective. So authorities, we can understand how they have to try to balance reacting and overreacting. So they want to ensure public safety and free speech and, of course, the reputations of their cities. So they're trying to balance these issues, and protesters are concerned about free speech, and they want to make sure that their issues remain visible in the public eye, which is something that occupies do very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that they have been removed from their encampment in New York and in some other cities as well, is the movement at a standstill then?
No, I don't think so at all. For most Occupy throughout the country, what they see the actual encampment as a tactic to make the issue visible and to hopefully spark protest and debate, which has definitely happened. But in the meantime, while a lot of people just focus on the camps themselves, across the country, activists are doing a lot within their communities, and some are increasingly getting geared up for politics.
Mm-hmm. You know, the group Adbusters, which first suggested that that there be these Occupy movements, did just the other day say, hey, declare victory and go home and plot for the future. Do you see this as a viable option?
Well, I would never suggest activists go home, but that's my bias for activism. I love to see people involved. But I think that that Adbusters would be behind what's actually happening on the ground. So, you know, in Colorado, where it's really hard this time of year to occupy given the temperatures, and probably Wisconsin as well, it gets a little uncomfortable there weather-wise. they're doing alternative activities, so such as, you know, holding vigils on the lawns of folks who are having their homes foreclosed upon, and so trying to bring attention to the issue during the day as well as give support. Other places in the country, you have activists, Occupy activists, occupying hunger or occupying homelessness. So there are things that are going on, but they're not necessarily oriented toward policy change, and that tends to be what we look for.
Yeah, so what would it take to turn the Occupy movement into a political force in American politics, or don't the activists want to be that political force?
Well, I think in some ways we've already seen some success because we're having conversations that mm-hmm. we haven't had before. So just the conversations that we're having about inequality in the U.S. is new, at least relatively, or at least new to this time period, right? So they've done that. And we have to also be careful about generalizing, because in some places, Occupy activists have decided that they are going to try to introduce and affect policy. Now, Occupyers, much like the Tea Party folks were, are a little bit wary of politicians. I mean, we have to keep in mind that one of the reasons why these movements emerged is because people are concerned over the concentration of power in the U.S. and what this means for political decision making. But activists generally are, you know, also very practical, and they realize what they need to do is try to work with politicians without being co-opted by them.
Yeah, at least early on, I heard a lot of talk about we are not endorsing any candidates. We're not, that's not what we're here for.
Correct, and we've mm-hmm. heard something similar with Tea Party movements. Let's
right.
oust out those people that aren't accountable to us. Like, let's get rid of them and let's just challenge what's happening. So I think this makes sense given evolution of movements, and particularly these two, which we see occurring back-to-back, really, that both of them regard politicians and electoral politics with some suspicion, but it will eventually warm up to them a bit.
Yeah. Do you believe the Occupy movement's message is being overshadowed by the various conflicts with police and the reports of crimes happening at the encampments?
I think that this definitely poses a communication problem, right? When you have other parts of a story being covered, then it's more difficult for them to get out their main purpose. But we also have to keep in mind that Occupies are a bit different because, you know, activists, there's no bouncer at the door checking IDs. They assume that they welcome everyone in, they assume everyone's there with good intentions, and that always doesn't play out. And these are exhausting. So I think there are definitely ways that this movement could have controlled its message better, but it also makes sense to me that they've struggled with that because it's pretty exhausting worrying about, you know, bathrooms and food and toilet paper and water and libraries and activism as well.
Yeah. Do you see similarities between the Tea Party and the Occupy movements?
Well, yes. I mean, again, they both are responding to the concentration of power and how the average citizen is able to get involved in the political process. Now, how they challenge this is, of course, very different. But we see these similar lines of thinking going through both movements. And what will be interesting to see is if the Occupy Wall Street movement, whether at local in localities or nationally, begin to challenge electoral politics and to challenge those office holders and push them to adopt policies that address inequality in the ways that they would like.
Yeah. I know you have not seen our survey, but I'm just wondering in general if you have some thoughts on whether the public supports or approves of the Occupy movement. There are 35% of those we ask say they either strongly approve or approve of the occupiers. So is that do we support this group?
I think that both movements, and yes, the Occupy movement, yes, they do have a lot of support. They're at a really critical point right now because they need to translate message into some kind of action. So if they're unable to do that, they risk losing support. And the Tea Party movement was able to do this. And in part because what you saw are these what I call political celebrities like Newt Gingrich and others taking up the ideas into, you know, mainstream media and into, you know, coalitions and organizing around them. And this sort of led the way for localities to decide how they wanted to do this as well. And so we're at that moment for the Occupy Wall Street. They have to decide what is that next step and then make it visible, and preferably before the holidays when everyone's distracted with other things.
Yeah, and again, in our survey, about a third of the public strongly or approves of the Tea Party. So we have sort of a, does that seem about right for the nation?
I haven't seen recent support. I haven't seen recent surveys on the Tea Party movement support. I think that, you know, survey data, we always have to be a little little wary of it. And, you know, opinions on movements and the ideas that they are championing always goes up and down.
We are talking with Dina Rollinger. She is Associate Professor of Sociology at Florida State University. She studies political protest and social movements, and we are talking with her about the Occupy movement and the Tea Party movement, and whether or not the Occupy movement will get the kind of political clout that the Tea Party seems to have these days. And we're taking a look as well at the future of the Occupy movement, as this week the Occupy Wall Streeters were evicted from their park, and today they are holding mass demonstrations in New York and encouraging the same types of demonstrations in cities across the country as they contemplate the future of Occupy Wall Street. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you will join us tomorrow at this time. It's the Week in Review. We will talk about all the big political news of the week, including the recall effort, the presidential race, and probably more on the Occupy movement as well, with two guests from different perspectives. It's the Week in Review, every Friday between 8 and 9. Right now we are talking about the Occupy movement, comparing it somewhat to the Tea Party movement. The Tea Party translated its protests into political power. Can the Occupy movement do the same? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. And our first caller is Daryl in Bloomington. Hello, Daryl.
Yeah, hello. The message they should construct should be about how the economy can be positively affected. There's $2 trillion in the private sector. There's a lot of people that have money that they can invest in making their homes more efficient, making their small businesses more efficient. And we need energy home efficient auditors, which we don't have nearly enough of, and we need blower doors, and we need different things, which...
I don't get it, Daryl. So you say Occupy should be helping in winterizing our homes and such?
No. Well, they can, but if you get media to motivate the public sector, I mean the private sector, where there's a lot of money, there's a lot of money in the private sector. There's $2 trillion altogether, or $2.5 trillion, but there's people that can afford to weatherize their homes and buy more efficient
equipment. How does the Occupy movement do this?
Well, it's the message. You know, you do analysis paralysis. You analyze, talk about, but you don't talk about what we can do. And I'll tell you, people in the private sector, everyone in the private sector, and especially the media, can do wonders for changing the economy, not only in America, but worldwide. It really hurts me to see why the latent power that is involved in mass communications is not used in a positive way.
Daryl, you're taking us way, way off topic, and I didn't mean to anger you, but we are talking about the Occupy movement and the future of the Occupy movement. So, not about the media's failures, but I'll let our guest, Professor Rollinger, react to that.
One thing, I can definitely hear Daryl's passion, and this is one of the reasons why I do the research that I do. And I think he's also articulating something that's important. When we talk about inequality, it involves so many things. It entails so many different aspects of our economy, our home lives, and the Occupy movement, again, is just at that moment where they need to begin to articulate goals so folks like Daryl know what is the next step. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Where do we go?
Yeah. Well, is there some way that the Occupy movement would have that sort of influence on the private sector that Daryl is calling for?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the locality, and what they decide matters locally. So in Florida, for example, homelessness and hunger, particularly for veterans, are important issues, and that's what activists are focused on. Now, it's much warmer in Florida, so something like heating might be an important issue for occupies in colder climates, and maybe there are ways for them to try to focus on low-income families that need, or elderly populations that do need these measures.
Mm. Our next caller is Tim in Ladysmith. Hello, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I remember hearing a gentleman on WPR originally speaking about the Occupy movement when it was first starting, and I thought he was had some good points about the protests were initially to protest what was happening with Wall Street and the entire bailout of big money in Wall Street and so on. Unfortunately, I thought he spent a lot of time slamming the Tea Party, and I think the Tea Party's gotten a lot of bad press. Predominantly, the Tea Party seems to be, from what I've read and heard from their leaders, is predominantly to deal with overspending of our government and national debt. And it seems, unfortunately, that what I'm hearing coming out of the Occupy movement now is the government owes everybody a bailout, and we hate America, and we're anarchists and want to overthrow capitalism. And if that continues to be their message that we're hearing, that's a major turnoff to Americans, because we're not anarchists. Mm-hmm. And so, anyhow.
All right. Thank you, Tim. So is that the message that that's getting out, Deanna?
Well, Dina? I think it varies. And I think we always hear messages in very different ways. And I think one of the big messages, though I completely agree with Tim, it's not always as clear, is that it should be, is not that people are owed something, but that Americans are struggling, and it's not just a few Americans, it's a lot of Americans. And so when we think about working hard for the American dream, people are working hard and they're struggling more and more, and they're seeing it's not just them, that it's also their neighbors, and they're wondering, they're looking in the mirror and they're saying, it's not just me, we need to do something, we need to say something. So it's not about what's owed, it's about what is going on structurally that needs to happen. And just his point about the Tea Party movement as well, I think that this is another interesting thing that happens with social movements, and I suspect that we'll see this with the Occupy Wall Street movement as well. As movements narrow their messages, they inevitably turn off some people, and this can lead to things like bad press. But this is just simply a consequence of a social movement's evolution.
Dina Rollinger is an associate professor of sociology at Florida State University. She studies political protest and social movements, and we are talking about the Occupy movement and the Tea Party movement, and we're looking at the political clout and future of both. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Nancy in Sheldon. Hello, Nancy.
Good morning. I believe that the Occupy movement is of the people, of all the people that you don't hear as much on the news, and it will be strong. And the Tea Party was strong maybe to begin with. It was like to limit government, take away government out of people's lives. And if you see who was supporting the Tea Party, where they were getting their money from, it was from the Koch brothers, and it was from big business and big Wall Street business. And if you had just a moment, I'd like to just give you a comment about when the Tea Party first started. We had a young student that came here to our house, and she was probably about 10 or 11 years old. And she says, "Do you think we have too much government in our lives?" And she was speaking about the Tea Party. And I said, "Well, look at it." I said, "You go to school? Do you think we need police officers? Do you think we need libraries? Do you think we need a government? Do you think we need a White House?" "Well, of course we need all those things." I says, "Those things are government." I says, "And without government," I said, "we would be in a sad shape." "Oh, I never thought about it that way." But she was listening to her parents. Now you can see what's happened with all these governors that got elected, and we're recalling one here in Wisconsin. They took away the right to bargain. That's the Tea Party's agenda. And when people find this out,
yeah,
the Occupy is going to be very successful.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Can you talk, Professor Rollinger, about the funding of the Tea Party and the groups like Americans for Prosperity and ALEC and others that people say are directing Republican governors all over the country?
Right. Well, I think that the money point is extraordinarily important, and I don't think it's just Tea Party. I think that one of the interesting things that I increasingly see in social movements is that there are moneyed interests within them. And one of the things that I think Nancy spoke very eloquently about is that movements are supposed to be of the people. And one thing that I have seen with the Tea Party movement, as well as the Occupy Wall Street movement in the state of Florida, is activists really challenging how these outside groups with all of these funds get involved in their states and in what they consider their local movements.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, is there some attempt by labor unions to get involved with the Occupy movements?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It makes complete sense for unions to get involved with the Occupy. They're speaking to very similar kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm. We have a Facebook comment from Patrick who writes, "I think there are similarities between the Occupy Wall Street movement and the demonstrations of the 60s. Hopefully they will find their voice as leaders of the movement come forward." Professor Rollinger?
Yes, I think that is a observation that is often made. And the one thing that I would say that we need to be very careful about, and this goes back to, again, Nancy's point about movements being of the people, is that who we see and who is involved in movements is not always the same. So, for example, there are a lot of baby boomers that are involved in Occupy Wall Street. So while we might see just this student face, that's not always who's involved behind the scenes. And I'll just give one quick example from, there's a woman that I called Deborah, and she has two kids, and she has a full-time job, and she couldn't occupy Tallahassee. She can't occupy anything. She's just trying to get through day-to-day life. But she made a lasagna for the occupiers, and this is participation as well. Now, granted, again, we don't see her face in the news coverage, but she's still there, she's still involved, and she's not the only one.
Next we go to Kathy in Chaseburg. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, thank you. Some other callers have touched on what I wanted to mention, and that is the right wing has sort of spent decades building a media pipeline to get its message out from Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, and other right wing talk show hosts, think tanks, columnists in newspapers. And so when a movement like the Tea Party gets started by, as another caller pointed out, moneyed interests, they have this giant megaphone to get whatever message they want to get out, and they have their celebrity politicians who are regularly featured on these media outlets, whereas the Occupy movement doesn't have that. And the only way they can get their message out is by increasing their numbers and maybe showing people that are many police forces have become militarized. Their celebrity politicians, from Ron Paul on the right to Bernie Sanders on the left, are hardly ever seen on any media. And that's why the Occupy people are so concerned about internet neutrality, because right now that's kind of the only avenue that they have to get their message out.
Mm-hmm. Dina?
Yes, I think Kathy makes a really interesting point about media and who these media are actually reaching. And so she's absolutely right. The conservatives have a huge presence on television and radio. Now, the progressive side, however, does have a really great and strong presence on the internet. And these can fundamentally reach very different audiences.
Is there unfair coverage of the Occupy movement in terms of, I do hear conservative commentators calling the occupiers, you know, lazy, no good bums and thieves and people who ought to go get a job and that sort of thing?
I think that I have seen enough research to be convinced that some outlets do have slants in favor of particular causes one way or the other. Mm-hmm. So I think that when you're talking about Fox News, for example, and yes, they are doing this, and Pew Research recently did, I don't remember the figures off my hand, but it's available free online mm-hmm. for listeners, and they have studied coverage of both and when they peaked and what kinds of outlets are saying what.
Yeah, well, who are the occupiers?
It's a very diverse mix. I mean, similar to both movements have been mm-hmm. very diverse, and what we see are really opposite trends in terms of the media face of the movement. The occupiers range in age quite a bit. So, again, the folks that we're not seeing are the people that have that are managing children, minor children, and have full-time jobs and are finding other ways to get involved. Mm-hmm. And some of them, because they have political roots in the 60s, they came of age in the 60s, and they know about activism, at least locally, are starting to focus on making appointments with politicians when they come back into town. So who we see and who always is involved, who's involved, is not always the same.
Yeah, and is it fair to say that the goal, if there is just a goal, is to somehow narrow the gap between the rich and the poor?
Yes, I think mm-hmm. that's a huge goal, and this mm-hmm. is what social movements have to do. They have to dream big. And the problem, of course, for all movements is now they need to define the steps to get to that big goal.
Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Darlene in Denmark. Hello, Darlene.
Hi. I just have a question. Do these occupiers realize that a lot of middle-class individuals have money invested via 401k stock options that they bought in the companies that they work for, their pensions, it's all invested in Wall Street? There's a lot of us middle-class people that bought relatively small homes, paid them off. We've worked for 40 years and invested our money in Wall Street via these options, and if capitalism goes down, there goes our money, and there goes our children's education that we've saved for.
Dina, are the occupiers trying to do away with capitalism?
No, that's not the argument, at least as I've heard it articulated at all. The call is for more responsible capitalism. Capitalism that recognizes that everyone's putting in, and therefore everyone should have a chance at their reward, so the American dream. And I completely understand where Darlene is coming from. I mean, I have two children myself, and they're only 8 and 2, and I'm already frantically saving for college education. And I have retirement as well, but they're not attacking what we're doing for our families and for our children. What they're saying is there's a fundamental problem when we have all these folks working to make this country work, but while we're struggling and having more difficulty, others are continuing to do better. And why? Why shouldn't everyone have a chance at the pie?
All right, Darlene, thanks for the call. Paul in Slinger is with us now. Hello, Paul.
Hey, good morning. The problem is that this organization is diffused. It's disjointed, and it has no definitive course of action or policy statement on what they want, shall we say, the various players in Wall Street to do. it's not they don't have a coherent plan. So for example, I would suggest that they get to their congressman and say, we want a transaction fee on the sale of stocks and options. It's a nominal fee, same as you pay when you purchase something at a store or a service. Another income generator for the citizens of this country would be to do as many oil-producing countries in the world do, and that is create a sovereign wealth fund where the oil in the offshore federal waters are owned by you and I, the citizens, and we contract out for the oil companies to bring the oil to market, into the global oil market. For example, they would do the valving stations, the piping, and then sell it. So, and they would be making a handsome, they would bid on this, and they would make a handsome profit on performing those services, but the profit for the oil goes into the sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah. There's a very very worthy idea, I'm sure, there, Paul. But again, these are the types of solutions that the Occupy movement should come up with and then start working with their congresspeople to pass, Dina?
Well, I would never tell activists what to do, mostly because what would be the point, right?
Our callers seem to have these real specific, they ought to do this specific thing.
Right, and I think, Paul is trying to do the work that he sees that occupiers need to do. And I think that this is what their debates are about across the country right now. What is it that we need to do? Who's the target? What are we trying to do in our communities? What do we want done in terms of national politics? And, yeah, he's right. They're trying to find their footing.
Yeah, and he says they're just plain too fragmented. Does he have a valid point there?
Well, I think movements are always very diverse, and this can be a real strength for social movements. The more support you have, the more potential a movement has. And they've been very wise, just as the Tea Party movement was, for as long as possible, avoid really divisive issues so that you can maintain broad support and try to focus some of this energy toward change.
Our next caller is Greg in Eau Claire. Hello, Greg.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is more of a comment than a question, or it could turn into a question. I see between the Occupy, the Occupiers and the Tea Partiers, as the Tea Partiers, they made up mostly of middle and upper middle class people with, for issues that pertain to them and which were historically, not viewed, but, listened to, whereas the Occupy Wall Street, since they historically have, the people have been marginalized and their voice hasn't been heard, it's hard for them to get a voice into, what they need. And it's more generalized, and I do agree with the gentleman before that it is fragmented. And I'm for the occupiers, definitely. But I think that, historically, their voice and their ideas about equality and so general hasn't been is always, I can't say.
Well, let me jump in, Greg, just because we have limited time and lots of other callers waiting. Is the Occupy movement the have-nots and the Tea Party made up of the haves, Dina?
I wouldn't say that. And I think, based on my research, which included doing a year-long study of the Tea Party movement in the state of Florida and interviewing, almost 75 activists, they were not just the haves. And so there were lots of folks that were lower income. There were several that were unemployed as well. So I think that we always have to be careful about generalizing who these movements are constituted.
Dina Rullinger is an associate professor of sociology at Florida State University. She studies political protest and social movements, and we are talking with her about the Tea Party movement and the Occupy movement, and talking in a little bit more about the future of the Occupy movement as it is its 2-month anniversary today. And there are several Occupy demonstrations happening right now in New York this morning and in other cities across the nation. They are commemorating the 2-month anniversary, but also protesting the eviction from their encampments in New York and other cities in recent days. What is the future of the Occupy movement? And do you understand what's happening? Do you support what's happening, approve of what's happening, or what the Occupy movement wants? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Have you participated in Tea Party rallies or Occupy activities? You can tell us why. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear oral arguments regarding the constitutionality of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. After 9, Kathleen and her guests will examine the legal arguments and potential consequences of the Supreme Court's decision. That's coming up in our next hour. Our next caller for our discussion about the Tea Party movement and the Occupy movement is John in Delafield. Hello, John.
Yes, good morning. I have attended a couple of Tea Party rallies, and I think a couple of the earlier callers probably have not. They're regular, everyday folks, and what we're against is reckless government spending. We're against the nanny state, the entitlement state. We believe collective bargaining is not a right. There's no such right enumerated in Wisconsin's Declaration of Rights or the U.S. Constitution. It's been a mechanism to shake down the taxpayers. And finally, we have a governor and a legislature that stood up and said, enough. So we don't believe that there has been enough fiscal responsibility. We think the OWS movement should be occupying the government and the Fed and all the reckless spending that has put us in this mess, including policies designed to loan money to anyone with a pulse, which is what created our housing market. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah, well, thanks, John, for sharing your reasons why you attend. You're part of the Tea Party movement. Dina, do you have any thoughts, reaction?
Yes, I mean, I think that John, again, just reiterated what I said a bit earlier, is we have to be really careful about the assumptions we're making about who these movements consist of. And I think, you know, all the points he makes, while some folks, I imagine, are a little annoyed, he just reminds us that this debate is important, and this is really what makes democracy robust.
Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Frank in East Troy. Hello, Frank.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I would just like to point out that when the Tea Party people that I know, when I pointed out to them during the Bush and Cheney years that the debt was being doubled and big government was giving out no-bid contracts to crony capitalists, they told me that I needed to shut up and that I was unpatriotic. And basically, once the Democrat got in power, then they were against big government and spending. So really, I think it's just the Republican base using that forum to bash a Democrat and really not about what they say they're about. And I hope Occupy Wall Street stays a piece on the table, because we need more voices to make change. That's all I got. Thanks.
Dina?
Well, yes. I mean, Frank, again, is just talking about how things change, you know, relatively quickly, and there is a great deal of discontent. And what we're seeing is two very different responses to it.
Our next caller is Bob in Stevens Point. Hello, Bob.
The end does not justify the means. The last caller did not compare what might have happened. Andrew Breitbart did not pay out the $100,000 reward for somebody spitting on a black congressman next to Nancy Pelosi, because it probably never happened. All the senior citizens, the old people, some of them would be diabetic. You didn't see any needles. They picked up after themselves. Do you know who Code Pink is?
Yeah. Relate this to the discussion, Bob.
Okay. They always try to agitate. When I turn on C-SPAN to watch Solyndra, I don't want to see Code Pink there. That's what you got in Wall Street. Those people are so disjointed. The old lady in Seattle that got pepper sprayed, there's an expression. You don't dance in the sun with butter on your head. And she should be old enough to know that.
I haven't heard that one, but you don't dance in the summer with butter on your head. Dina, are the occupiers agitators and troublemakers?
Well, I think if we call occupiers agitators, then we should just think of all activists as agitators, because social movements, regardless of their cause or what they're oriented to or their issue, they're going to use tactics that some folks are not going to agree with. And so, yes, agitators. So, but all activists are such. But I also think Bob makes a really sort of interesting comment about there's not only discontent about where we are as a country, but there's a general discontent with politics and how the politics are being done in Washington. And what are the ways in which people can engage? Is it really that surprising when we have politicians screaming at each other that we would have, you know, citizens participating by adopting similar behavior?
Yeah, I think Bob also was trying to say the Tea Party is more respectful than Occupy. Can a case be made there? We have one group that's, in some cases, on purpose doing some civil disobedience, and the other maybe not.
Well, I have seen similar tactics. I mean, while Tea Party movement hasn't occupied places, they definitely have engaged in invisible protest. And I know that there are more than a few people that have found their signs extraordinarily offensive, and some of the things that they've done within these protest setting or as counter-protesters at some of the progressive events offensive. So again, I mean, I think if we're going to use that terminology of agitator, then we need to recognize that this is an equal opportunity term. It goes across the political spectrum.
Do the Occupy movement or the Tea Party movement resemble any past social or political movements?
Well, ideas always tend to reemerge. So I think that there's a variety of other past movements that people will look to. But I think there's some that we tend to even forget. So I've seen a lot of discussion lately about, you know, the Occupy. Oh, this is just reminiscent of the 60s and the hippies. But there are many other examples in which Occupies have been used. So I think one that we often forget about are the veterans in the 1930s who were promised an $1,000 bonus when they returned and marched to Washington and took up encampment in D.C. so that they could get that $1,000.
Here's a comment from Brent on Facebook. I think the Occupy movement is more of a call for deep change rather than temporary fixes and single-issue reforms. No political party or organization is in charge, so it gives everyone a chance to participate and have a voice to express different ideas. Yes, Dina?
Yes, well, I agree that the Occupy Wall Street movement is calling for deep change, but the Tea Party movement did as well, as we've heard some of the previous callers express.
Mm-hmm. And next we go to Joe in Wausau. Hello, Joe.
Hi. I think the Occupy Wall Street movement needs to boil down to one main issue, and the message needs to be strong and clear, and that is go to your primary elections, people of both parties, and vote. Vote for the candidate who is going to support a constitutional amendment to declare corporations as not people, because that really is the root of all of our campaign financial issues, is that corporations somehow have the rights of people. So this message needs to be broadcasted out there throughout the movement, and this needs to be taken to the primaries so that our candidates, when they get into Congress, have the political will to actually amend the Constitution and give the power back to the American people and take it away from the corporations.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Joe, for the call. And I know, Dina, you're not here to tell Occupy or the Tea Party what to do, but I can't imagine that that Citizens United decision is not going to be discussed when Occupy people are not over the winter.
No, it definitely is locally. Again, I can't attest to across the country, but I know within the state of Florida, this is something that Occupy activists are discussing and trying to figure out what are the ways in which we can mobilize around this in a meaningful way. But Joe, again, speaks very articulately about the need for the movement to communicate a clear goal. And I agree with them. Everyone should vote.
Yeah. Tom in Wausau, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I Joe kind of beat me to the punch here, but I would just add to what he said that it's, you know, the disparity in between people with money or people who are extremely wealthy and doing well in our economy today and those who aren't. It didn't start with, the Supreme Court decision to, treat corporations as individuals. I mean, this has been coming for quite some time, and of course it's a problem that we have where people don't participate in our political system, and it's not that hard to do nowadays with all the ways that you can participate. But also, we need to go back and look at who really is running our government and, ask yourself, is this what our founding fathers had in mind, that we should just basically sit around and expect people to do things for us?
Yeah. And I'm Tom, do you generally support what the Occupy movement is trying to do or the Tea Party movement is trying to do?
I don't want to deify these people, but they're extremely courageous. The people who have gotten out and are doing what they're doing, this is not an easy thing to do. I mean, try sleeping in a park in New York in November and tell me that, gee, this is the best way I could spend my time. Mm-hmm. These people are making, a personal sacrifice to do this, and they should be, held up as good citizens.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of that, Dina?
Yeah, Tom is right. I think that we're in this very interesting and important political moment, and hopefully one of the consequences that we see from both movements is that we will see average citizens reengaging, because as most folks know, our voting rates are pretty abysmal. And so maybe we'll see people just reinvest in the democratic process.
Yeah. Do you expect that right now, I'm just looking on the wire here, police have started to arrest protesters who are sitting on the ground and blocking traffic into New York's financial district. Police in riot helmets have hauled away several protesters. This is going on right now as demonstrators are commemorating their two-month anniversary of Occupy Wall Street and their eviction a couple of days ago from the park in New York. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see these kinds of protests just keep on coming?
Yeah, potentially for the foreseeable future. And I think some of the guests preferred the term fragmented, and I prefer the term diverse. And what we see with successful movements is you do have people that are out there reminding everyone that this is an issue that matters and it requires attention. But then you also have folks that are setting up those appointments and making those phone calls and meeting with their legislatures.
And in our final minute, where do you see this going on both sides for that matter?
Well, I think that we will be discussing both of these movements for year to come. And again, I hope that the big consequence is that we see an important re-engagement in democracy and democratic processes from voting on up.
Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Dina Rollinger is a associate professor of sociology at Florida State University. She studies political protest and social movements. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing this hour, and thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I hope you also join us tomorrow at this time. It will be the Week in Review. We'll have two guests from different perspectives talking with you about all the big news of the week. We'll certainly talk some more about the recall effort that kicked off this week to try to recall Governor Scott Walker. We'll talk about the latest developments in the presidential race, and we'll probably talk about the Occupy movement and what's happening right now as well. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.